The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Is this James Harden kind of trying to smooth things out? Because if he only has one destination, the Brooklyn Nets, that makes it more difficult to do a deal. Or is this James Harden and the Houston Rockets kind of back-channeling? And the Rockets telling him, look, James, if you do this, if you make public that Brooklyn is the only place you'll go to, you're handcuffing us. We can't, like, you want to trade out of town, we can't do it, and we can't do it to Brooklyn either, because there'll be no other bidders. We're not even going to get their best deal. So, you know, like, and therefore now they're making this public through the media? Or, in fact, has James Harden realized that he has got to get out of Houston? Whether it's Brooklyn or somewhere else doesn't matter, as long as he has a shot. The Philadelphia 76ers certainly give him a shot. But more than that, the reality is, if you're trading James Harden, you are going to lose the deal. There's almost no way you can win that trade, because the history of the NBA is the team that gets the best player in the deal wins the deal. How are you going to get a better player than James Harden? If you had some kind of some team with a treasure trove of high picks, that's one thing. But if that's a treasure trove of high picks, it means it's not a very good team. Why would James Harden want to go there? And if it is a good team, those picks wouldn't be worth much, right? Even if they're not lottery protected. So the point is, Philadelphia makes a lot of sense. Because Ben Simmons, Raj, I got you right in my ear, thank you very much. Because Ben Simmons is the only player on the Nets or the Sixers. Let's limit it to those two teams for a second, because realistically, that's where Harden is probably heading, right? To Daryl Morey, his old GM, who identified Harden as a superstar when people just thought he was a nice player and traded him for peanuts, got him for peanuts, rather, and then got him a coach who even elevated his star status beyond where Harden already was. Or the Nets with Kyrie and KD, which is a super team, very, very likely to at least get out of the Eastern Conference their first year together. Philadelphia makes sense. Ben Simmons is a great player already. And if you get Simmons back in a deal for James Harden, that is not the same thing as Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie, nice players. Above average players, above average starters, but maybe not really actually all-stars, really. And you know, on a good year, maybe they make an all-star team. But you get a couple of those guys and a couple of draft picks for James Harden, it's not enough. Ben Simmons, straight up for James Harden, is enough, because Simmons is considerably younger and is a truly great player. I mean, I know he doesn't shoot. He'd be an MVP player if he shot. But he's created more open looks for three than anyone since he's gotten in the league. And he was the best defender in basketball last season before he got hurt. 6'10", a basketball IQ and court vision like a poor man's LeBron James. And by the way, with better handles, maybe not so poor. A lower middle class man's LeBron James. And so, like, you know, if Harden is serious, Philadelphia is an excellent destination. And by the way, Harden and Embiid, what I love so much about that combination is Daryl Morey starts with a big, the likes of which he could not attract to the Houston Rockets. A talent in Embiid that you can't just acquire if you don't already have a guy like that on your roster. Morey did an amazing job getting Harden to Houston and building a team and a system with D'Antoni that got a team that didn't have enough talent, really, very, very close to winning a championship. Because had they gotten by the Warriors, pretty clearly, I think, they would have won the title. But in Philadelphia, Harden, were he to win a ring, would not be, that ring would not be discounted the way it would be in Brooklyn. I mean, it's great if he and KD and Kyrie could do it. It'd be great and everything. But people would certainly point to the fact, like, James, you joined KD and Kyrie Irving. Yeah, you know, two MVP players and a guy who's more than just an all-star is supposed to win a ring eventually. But in Philly, that would be different. Not an easy choice for Harden. You know, in Philly, he's not joining a team that's already on the verge of being a super team or anything like that. It's not an easy choice for Harden. Because the Brooklyn Nets, if the borough of Brooklyn wins a championship for the first time since the Dodgers left, since 1955, but the Dodgers left in 57. If the city of New York wins a basketball championship for the first time since 76, ABA, the Nets, but in the NBA since 73 with the Knicks, that's the hottest ticket in the world in sports. What would courtside seats go for there? The Nets would be the sexiest franchise in worldwide sports if he could do that. So I get the attraction. And with KD and Kyrie, you would think that could happen. Although we got to get into Kyrie in a little while, too. But in Philly, it's not such a slam dunk, so to speak. In Philly, he and Embiid will have had to have worked for it together in a way where going in, you don't look at the roster and go, oh, yeah, they're a shoe-in. You go, if Harden rises to the occasion, they could get it done. And he would have a legitimate chance to rise to the occasion. Not like in Houston, where it's like, Morey did a good enough job of putting maybe enough talent around him to compete. But when you looked at the Golden State Warriors, you go, come on, man. KD and Steph and Klay and Dre and Iggy, it's too much. Who's Harden have? An injured Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza and a couple guys? It's not enough. Wouldn't be that in Philly. He'd have another star with him, maybe a superstar in Embiid. And yeah, Tobias Harris is overpaid, but he can play. And Seth Curry can shoot the lights out, and Danny Green can 3-and-D. You know, suddenly Harden would have a legit shot on a team where it wouldn't kind of be discounted in the public's imagination were they to win. That was straight talk. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Meantime, boy, the stuff Kyrie got into. Kyrie. It's like the Odd Couple. Oscar. Kyrie. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. Meantime, the Steelers blow a lead to Washington, and they lose their unbeaten record yesterday, last night. They were up 14-0 shortly before the half. They went on to lose 23-17. It's the first loss of the season, and it was also the second largest blown lead for a Steelers team at home in franchise history. And I know you've seen the stats by now, but just to refresh your memory, 109 wins, 2 losses, 1 tie when leading by 14 points at any point since drafting Roethlisberger in 04. 109-2-1, went up 2 touchdowns at any point in the game. But recall, Monday afternoon's game was originally scheduled for Sunday, moved back due to last week's game against the Ravens getting pushed to Wednesday. Now think about this. The Steelers got to get run blocking. They have to get, as Casey Joyner, the football scientist, will tell you on this show, and has told us many times on this show, great run blocking, an average running back gets 7 yards. A great one will get 10. Bad run blocking, a great back will get 2 or 3 yards. So when you see 14 carries for 21 yards, it's bad run blocking. That's not like if they had Le'Veon Bell. No, that's bad run blocking. And if the Steelers get that kind of play from their offensive line, they ain't going to do much. However, let's keep in mind, this Steelers team was playing on 4 days rest and playing their third game in 13 days. And they're coming off a win against the Ravens. You know, the best time, as Ryan Clark says, to play the Steelers or Ravens is after they play each other. So you have that, the emotional high of the Ravens, a letdown afterwards. 3 games in 13 days and 4 days rest heading in to face an underrated Washington team and an underrated Washington defense. The Washington franchise and the New York Giants are the teams in the NFC East who are going in with the lowest expectations, but the culture change on top with the coaches. Joe Judge has done an excellent job. Ron Rivera is a respected coach throughout the league, and he has a track record to back it up. The culture changes in Washington and New York have those teams in first place in the worst division in football. Nevertheless, Washington was being a little slept on. So it had all the trappings of a trap game, which I thought the Steelers could avoid because of the way Tomlin chewed them out after the Ravens game. But in the end, couldn't avoid it, even though they were up 2 touchdowns. And it was Alex Smith, former first round, first pick overall in the NFL draft, Alex Smith making a play at the end of the game, toward the end of the game at least. Mike Tomlin, after the game, on how the adversity of this first loss may be good for the Steelers.
Different points along the journey, you get a chance to learn about yourself, who you are, what you're made of, individually and collectively, and it takes the journey to reveal that. And so, you know, we're faced with a loss now, so we'll get an opportunity to smile in the face of it.
Yeah. Stephen A. was trying to argue on the air today that it would be a good thing for the Steelers to kind of get the loss out of the way. It stinks. There's no way to say, come on, there was an undefeated team in week 13. You know, the Miami Dolphins pop champagne, the 72 Dolphins again. Right, you saw it on SportsCenter this morning. No, it would have been great if the Steelers could have gone undefeated, of course. But they're not, like, if you look at undefeated teams, I remember the Giants were undefeated 10-0 the year they lost. They got destroyed by the Ravens in the Super Bowl 2000. And one of the all-time great defenses, that Baltimore team. And you knew the Giants were good, but you were looking at, this ain't going to be an undefeated season for the Giants. They ain't that good. And the same thing with the Steelers. The Steelers were doing a little bit with smoke and mirrors. And they can play defense. Even when they're not great, they're good defensively. But if you can't run the ball, you're going to be in trouble. And Ben Roethlisberger is having an amazing year for a guy who is, 38 years old, coming off catastrophic injury. But in recent weeks, he has not looked as good as he did, you know, a month ago. Meantime, you know who did look as good as they did a month ago? Or at least to start the season, remember when he was really hot? Is Josh Allen. That dude might have the biggest, well, Mahomes. But Josh Allen's there with Mahomes in terms of the biggest arm in the game. And they dominated a Niners team that, you know, look, coming off a win against L.A., against the Rams team, the Niners team can play defense. They snapped, by the way. A lot is being made of this. The Bills snapped their Monday Night Football winless streak because they'd lost their previous seven games on Monday Night Football before last night. 34-24. Cole Beasley set a career high, 130 yards. But Josh Allen was great. He was great. 32 of 40, 375 yards, four TDs. And that's who the Steelers got coming up. Roethlisberger and Josh Allen trending in different directions. Big, strong, big-armed quarterbacks, but one dude is 38 and one dude is 24. Here's Richard Sherman after the game on the game he saw Josh Allen play.
He made some plays. You got to give him credit. You know, he was in good control of the game. He didn't pass up any easy looks. He didn't take any risky throws. The D-line was doing everything they could and put a lot of pressure on him, but he did a great job of evading, you know, and extending plays. And you extend plays for, you know, 4 or 5 seconds, then, you know, the coverage usually breaks down regardless of what you're in. So you got to give him credit, man. He played a freaking fantastic game.
Yeah, you got to give Josh Allen credit. But how much credit do you give him? Yeah, he's mobile with a big arm. And by the way, I doubted Josh Allen and Mitch Trubisky and, well, for that matter, Carson Wentz in the beginning, in the very beginning. And then again, more recently, and Lamar Jackson, like all those kind of mobile quarterbacks. Whenever I hear the first thing about a quarterback is how fast he is, like you could see Mitch Trubisky early on. Wow, he's outrunning linebackers, but can he throw it down the field? No, not in Trubisky's case. In Carson Wentz's case, yes, and now no, right? But he did it consistently. You know, the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson, we'll see. I think I suspect Lamar is suffering the effects of COVID, maybe even before he was officially diagnosed. You know, because that has like an incubation period or whatever, you know, that's over a week. You can have COVID and not show symptoms in an obvious way for a while. And I noticed that with Cam, too. The week before he was diagnosed, he didn't look great. So I wonder how much of that is affecting Lamar Jackson. But Lamar has yet to establish himself as consistently elite, although obviously the MVP of the league was elite last year. Josh Allen's an elite quarterback right now. He's an elite quarterback. You got to give it to him. His rookie year, he's 22 years old. The team has a losing record. and he throws a touchdown to an interception for every touchdown. In fact, more. It's like 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, something like that. And he completed around 50% of his passes. The next year, he's 23 years old. Now it's year two. This is where the development happens. Instead of 50% of his passes, he's completing around 60% of his passes. Instead of essentially a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, it's a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. And they win 10 games. Now he's in his third year. He's 24 years old. His completion percentage ain't 50% like his rookie year, 60% like last year. It's 70% now. His TD to interception ratio ain't 1-to-1 like his rookie year, ain't 2-to-1 like it was last year. It's 3-to-1 now. And he's headed, it looks, not just for 10 wins. And, you know, thanks for trying. Thanks for playing. But for more wins than that and playoff success. A lot of when you talk about who's elite comes down to the trajectory of their career and what you can reasonably look forward to. Like Josh Allen hasn't done it in a way where he is now on this level forever, but who really has? We judge these guys week to week, season to season. There were questions about Aaron Rodgers, who before I saw Patrick Mahomes, I thought Aaron Rodgers is the best I've ever seen. Is he still elite after last season? The answer this season is yes. So this is always in flux. We're constantly evaluating and reevaluating. Josh, you know, but when you have a 24-year-old quarterback who every season so far has increased his completion percentage by 10% and who's now a top 5 QBR in the league because he's 6 technically, but that's because Dak Prescott's in the top 5 who basically hasn't played all year, played a couple games early. So it means he's top, among active quarterbacks, Josh Allen's top 5 QBR. Passer rating, you can see it is a bit, basically 106. So at 24, do you suspect he's going to get better or worse? Or forget about even getting better. Let's say he just stays like this. How many quarterbacks in the AFC would you take before Josh Allen? Patrick Mahomes, 1. And then Josh Allen's in the conversation. I'd put him 3. I'd say Mahomes, 1. Deshaun Watson, 2. And Josh Allen, 3. But even picking Deshaun Watson, 2. If you'd have asked me 5 weeks ago, is Deshaun Watson, 2? I probably would have said no. The way he's played the last month, you got to say yes. These guys are young. Each game is a piece of evidence that takes up a disproportional kind of amount of their career. So when Deshaun Watson puts a month together like he did, it's like, okay, that really does increase, especially at his age. He's still ascending. He's great. Josh Allen, too. Josh Allen, too. That looks like a great young quarterback to me.
Max, the podcast.
Michigan-Ohio State football game called off due to COVID-19 cases with the Wolverines. We're going to take your calls on that later. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 729-3776. Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Now, as a member of the media, you're aware that you actually do have influence, not only on sometimes the way fans think or what subjects are discussed, but sometimes on teams themselves, on decisions they make. And my next guest, oh, is he great at breaking down NFL tape? If he wants to be a coach one day, it could be in his future, I think. But boy, did you have to hold that L, Dan Orlovsky, on the Shell Penzo performance line about Carson Wentz. And in fact, Dan, you, as his biggest booster in the media, you stayed with him through thick and thin, and it kept getting thinner and thinner. And eventually, you finally said, okay, fine, he's no good. And no lie, Dan, like, I don't think it's an accident. You came out and said that, and that week, coach benches him. He took him out of the game. Not a coincidence, Dan. However, Dan, coach just named Hurts his starting quarterback. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I am honored and humbled that you think I have that much influence. It means a lot to me. I don't think that I have that much influence.
You have more than you realize.
All right, so I'm gonna be dead honest here and have like a real conversation instead of just going back and forth. Like this decision had to be made. Mm-hmm. The reasons for this decision, everybody in Philadelphia has their hands in. You know, everybody in Philadelphia has their hands in why this came to be the situation that it's in right now. That being said, Carson Wentz opened this door with poor play. You know, he's had very few highs and way too many lows this season. So his play gave the organization the, we had no other choice but to make this move, essentially like an ultimatum, right? Because he wasn't playing good football. Jalen Hurts has got his hands full because this is a bad team and beat up offense, and obviously going to play against the Saints, which is the, one of the best defenses in football, the best secondary in football right now. What does it mean long term? Like, that's where my mind goes for Carson Wentz, because I don't think there's any chance that he's not in Philly next year because of the money. I don't think that there is. I could be dead wrong on that.
No, I think you're right. They're not going to be find a sucker to take him.
Right. And so I think of, okay, what does Carson Wentz need to do? Number one, he needs to figure out why this happened. He needs to stare himself in the mirror and ask the question, okay, Carson, why did this happen? What do I have to do to make sure that this never happens again? He has to take accountability for it. He has to be honest and transparent with it. Then the next step is to figure out as an organization, is it Wentz? Is it Doug Peterson? I don't think it can be both next year. I don't think, because I don't think the player will trust the coach. I don't.
But wait a minute, Dan, hold on. Let's step back before you get on to trust. See, I have a problem with what you just said, because let's start with this. There are a bunch of facts, right? And then you interpret the facts a certain way. I saw him regressing. I saw last year. I saw a continuation of it this year. Did it have partly to do with receivers dropping balls and not having this and not having that? Yeah, probably. But a lot of it, I think, also had to do with the coach, who was not free to choose his own staff, by the way, right? Who was a little shook to do what it would take to get Carson Wentz to buy in, because Carson Wentz has enormous power in the organization. There is a writer, Joe Santoliquido, out of Philly, who did a piece on Wentz and talked about some of these problems in the piece a couple of years ago. And, of course, the Eagles tried to squash him, right? And by the way, if anything, that shows you how much influence Wentz has. But like, these problems you could see developing over time. It's not just like it happened out of nowhere. Wentz was believing his own press clippings. He was told by Dan Orlovsky how great he was every week, in spite of the fact that frequently he wasn't. And Dan, even the thing about Jalen Hurts, they drafted a quarterback in the second round. Like, it's interesting. They were playing the Packers yesterday. Packers also drafted a quarterback, actually in the first round, to replace Aaron Rodgers, one of the greatest of all time. And, you know, like, think about how that went down. Instead of getting him weapons, Rodgers just balled. The Eagles draft a quarterback in the second round to back up Carson Wentz, or to eventually take his job, because they saw him going in a different direction. Wentz is getting the 12th best pass blocking in the league from his offensive line, the 4th best run blocking. Still can't do anything
like,
with it.
Max, come on, man. Like, what? You're watching the same game as me. We can't sit here and tell anyone that the offensive line is good. Like, just
it is. It's better than average.
Because you're reading a stat that says that their pass block win rate is X because they're going off a percentage of how many blocks they hold at 2.5 seconds, and some of their offense is catch and throw. So that means that's a win for the offense. It doesn't mean that they're pass blocking well. So, like,
are they less than average? They're not less than average.
The Philadelphia Eagles offensive line is not less than average, Max.
No.
Everybody is out. They don't have a single. So you mean their backups? You mean their backups, and then their backups are average NFL starters? Stop.
But Stop. Here's the bowl. They're playing like average NFL stars. But here's the problem. Dan, they drafted a quarterback. They drafted a quarterback in the second round.
Aaron Rodgers is one of the 10 best ever.
That's certainly
one of the best talents ever. You don't think he's got a little bit more mental maturity and emotional maturity to handle that? He's in his 15th year, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Carson Wentz is going into his 5th year. I'm not saying that, Carson, you don't want him to be more mentally mature and emotionally tougher, but you can't use Rodgers as the comparison because they're completely different accomplishments. Second of all, like, I don't understand how you can point consistently back to last year ago.
That's when the trend started.
Matt, he threw for
But wait, Dan. Of all people, this is why I'm really shocked that we argue about this, because you pay very close attention.
Because it's the NFL, Max.
But you pay close attention, so you had to. If I saw regression, you had to see it too. You're just describing it to different things. But I saw it, and you know 10 times more football than me, so you had to have seen him regressing, and then it continued this year. Dan, let me tell you why you have to sit
Wentz.
But
Max, you've been on the regression conversation for 3 years about Wentz.
No.
It didn't just start last year.
Listen, he has been, in terms of charting his progress, he was not as good his second year as his first year, etc.
But it wasn't like November of 19 you started talking about Carson Wentz regressing. You've been saying that since 2018.
No. Last year in the second half is really when I got on him, Dan. Like, that's really when I got on him. Like, I was shocked at how poorly he was playing and how much praise he was getting. But let me tell you why I think you have to sit him down. I think you have to sit him down now for the rest of this season, because if you're the Eagles, you're going to have a very high draft pick. You have to see if Jalen Hurts, like, Carson Wentz ain't your quarterback. He's going to be on the team because of his contract, but he's not going to be your quarterback. He'll never be great again. I don't believe you ever will be. I think he's beyond repair. Time will tell. But you got to see if Jalen Hurts, the second round pick you spent on Jalen Hurts instead of trading for DeAndre Hopkins, instead of going to trade up and getting CD Lamb, the second round pick you spent on Hurts, you got to see if you got to draft another quarterback right now with this top 5 or 6 pick you're likely to get. You got to find out about Hurts. You got to do it now, Dan.
Now, see, so this is where, you know, I had this conversation with our NFL Live crew before the show today, getting prepped, because, you know, Marcus said, I don't think this has anything to do with next year. And I was like, it absolutely has a ton to do with next year, because, all right, I don't think this is likely, Max, but, like, what happens if Jalen Hurts over the next 4 weeks plays good football, plays, like, pretty darn good football, and they go on a run of turnovers or something, they win a couple games, and then they win the NFC East. Now you got a huge problem, because this would be the second time in 3 years, no matter how highly I think of Carson Wentz's talent, that a quarterback outside of Carson Wentz has led the team on the last month to a playoff run. It'd be Foles 2 years ago and then Hurts this year. Yep. But you owe him $55 million next year.
Remember a month ago when I said bench him to hold him accountable and no, you shouldn't bench him, and now this is what happened. I said like 6 weeks ago, trade him for Nick Foles, not because Foles could do any better with this team. He couldn't, I don't think.
Yeah, but that wasn't going to happen.
Point is,
that's like saying, hey, go.
You got to find a sucker to take the contract. But 6 weeks ago, when Dan Orlovsky was still saying, no, he's still good, it's just X, Y, and Z, maybe you could get the Bears or someone to bite. Now that you are saying, this isn't good, I don't think you'll get anyone to take him.
No, I'm not saying that. I've been adamant. I still believe in Carson Wentz as a talent. There's no question asked. I can't speak to his, like, where he stands with his mental and emotional security and strength. I can't speak to that. I can't tell you there's no shot he won't be broken over this mentally. Mm. I just know the talent is 100% still there. And
I can see that from time to time. I can see arm talent, but it's just not consistent. But yeah, he can do amazing things game.
But that's for me. That's where I go. The coaching pulls that out. Like, the coaching demands that, gets that. And you can tell me he's got too much power. He obviously doesn't have that much power, because in the matter of a year, they drafted a kid in the second round and got benched.
I'm
so he
telling
can't be
you,
that
his,
powerful.
He's quite powerful. Dan, I'm telling you, the media is not giving him cover anymore. And the play is so poor that they can't make excuses anymore. That is the great Dan Orlovsky. You can hear him on NFL Live every day, frequently on First Take. He's all over ESPN, does some of the best video breakdown you'll ever see. You hear what Kyrie plans to do? 888-SAY-ESPN.
Max, the podcast. You got questions, and he's got answers.
So what am I going to do here?
This is Max Me Anything.
We have a lot of topics to get into. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And I'm actually going to take phone calls. What is it, Raj?
Yeah, but you got a tweet. You got a tweet from my man, Harold Boogie, out in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. He wants to know, what do you think about Kyrie and what he said to the media? About the media.
Listen, there's so much to get into. The Steelers get their, take their first L, right? Carson Wentz is benched officially, according to Peterson. It's Jalen Hurts. We got the Cowboys and the Ravens coming up. There's a lot to get into. And by the way, there's the Harden stuff and there's LeBron and Kyrie stuff. Not only did Kyrie put out one of his kind of self-important, idiotic notes to the media as though he'd said something profound, but like, LeBron James has commented on what Kyrie said on the podcast during the second game two of the NBA Finals this year regarding LeBron James. LeBron James took it to heart. You know, LeBron was like, yeah, it hurt my feelings a little bit. Kyrie saying, like, he's finally on a team with someone he doesn't mind taking the last shot. Because LeBron's like, why, that's not me? You know, Kyrie, he released a statement to the media. He's not going to be taking questions, basically. He's going to, you know, times are different. And so now he's going to be do things a little differently. And here's a statement and da-da-da-da. Like, I'm going to get into that in a little while, Rog. There's too much to get into, but I'm going to go off a bit on Kyrie. He wants to set the agenda, the narrative, right? He wants to control it. Nah, man, you got to take questions. It's not about what you want to say. The media has questions that the fans want to know about. And LeBron has every reason to have his feelings hurt. Look at LeBron's relationships with the star players he's played with, the superstars. Dwayne Wade. They're like best friends now for decades. AD and LeBron are getting along great. Why is it Kyrie's the only dude with a problem? LeBron's like, I wanted him to be MVP of the league. What's he talking about me for? Kyrie's got to ask himself, is that related to the reason that every team he's ever been on gets better once he leaves? Think about that for a second. Every team he's ever been on. He leaves, they get better. Not the Cavs, because LeBron also left. The Celtics, the Nets, that shouldn't be possible. Kyrie's one of the best players ever. So why is that? Why doesn't it work with the team? He doesn't want to talk to the media. So you're going to leave that to Kevin Durant? Just coming off of a catastrophic injury in the media capital of the world? You're supposed to be a leader, but you pass that along to someone else. Marcus in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan of your show. First-time caller. I have an excellent take on Carson Wentz and the situation.
I'll be the judge of whether it's an excellent take. Let me hear it.
I know, right? I believe, first of all, I believe somewhat in astrology. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to Get Up this morning, uh-oh, and Rex Ryan made an interesting comment about Carson Wentz. He said that his sources tell him that Wentz is a know-it-all in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. Now, by the way, as I said, Joe Santoliquido has been touching on this for a couple of years. A couple of years ago, he came out with an article about this. Not just a know-it-all, but really throws his weight around. I don't know what the stars say about that. If Jupiter is aligned with Mars, what your astrology tells you. But sources tell me that Wentz is not as well-liked as, say, Nick Foles was in that locker room. Raj started me talking about Kyrie Irving. I got to one call. 888-SAY-ESPN. I'm taking calls in the next block, Raj. Harden lists a new team he'd like to maybe be traded to. That was news from Max Kellerman Nation. Marcus hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Coming right up, we get to your calls, and we get into all NBA and NFL action. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, the podcast.